Welcome to the Song Lab Podcast. Ooh. This is Michael and Meredith Malden, where we discuss all things around worship, music, creativity, art, and family. And our desire is to empower, inspire, and equip you in such a way that you would create with God and transform the world around you.
Yes.
My name is Michael Malden.
And I'm Meredith Malden.
And I think that we got to do an introduction. We got to introduce who we are, what we're doing, right? This is a Song Lab Podcast, but who are you? And who am I? And I thought about that I would intro you, and you can intro me.
All right, sounds good.
Sounds good. So this is my wife, Meredith Malden. She is a worshiper, songwriter, mother of worshipers, an inspirer. She is the voice of Android 18 in Dragon Ball Z, which not many people know that, but you've been voice acting for over 20 years.
Yes.
You started singing with a big band orchestra when you were
16
years old, doing jazz, old standards. You did a show band for a long time.
Yeah.
And then we took a trip to Israel and it changed her world. And she became a worshiper first and foremost. And then that empowered and inspired everything else that she does.
For sure.
She is my favorite person. She is as authentic and real and consistent all the time. She loves Jesus. And she loves people, and she lays down her life constantly to follow God. So,
thanks, babe. You made me start crying before we even start. Okay, well, I get the privilege and honor of introducing Michael. I think it's important to kind of just set up who we are a little bit, too, so you know why we're doing what we're doing and why we have such a passion about this. But I want to say that from the first moment that I met Michael, he has wanted to just follow and go on an adventure with God. And so for the last 18 years or so, I have watched him follow God wherever he leads in some of the craziest places, craziest jobs, all the things. And so anywhere from, you know, Michael's done things from like selling insurance to running for political office to going after the Lord. Because of worship, the Lord has had him become the first worship leader, even at Upper Room, taught on worship at the Upper Room. He really was the director. What's the actual official term that you were at Upper Room?
Was I worship director?
Yeah, worship director, but also
executive
pastor over Upper Room for 7 years, where we really helped to kind of build that with the Millers and others. He's also just produced his first film. He loves all things creative. He is a holy cattle prod to all creatives, which I just love. He loves to just encourage the gift in people. He is an incredible dad. I have watched him father our kids, and I've just never seen such a he's just so involved, and they just think the world of him, and I love that about him. And I'm inspired by that, and it challenges me as a mother. And then also, he is an amazing husband. So I have loved watching his journey with the Lord. I have such respect and honor for him because he does walk in such integrity and honor. And if he says something, I can take it to the bank because he believes it with all his heart. So he won't say stuff unless he means it.
Dang.
Yeah. So there, I'm setting you up.
That guy sounds really good. Who is that guy? I guess I forgot to even mention that you've been blessed by the Upper Room, you should thank Meredith Malden because she started them songwriting and you know, teaching them how to worship. So
We learned together. We all learned together and that was a fun journey for sure.
We did. You know, when you said, you know, when you mentioned, you know, going on an adventure with God, it just immediately reminded me of when we were living in the West Bank of Israel and the Lord had me go on a fast. And all of a sudden you guys went to the beach one day and I find myself with this group of Muslims and I end up at a Yasser Arafat terrorist rally.
Oh my gosh.
And I come back with this Yasser Arafat armband and you're like, where have you been?
What have you been doing? How does this happen to you? Michael's one of those people that no matter what, he's going to come back with a crazy story because he's willing to go. When everybody else is running from the craziness, Michael will run right into it because, for one, it creates great stories and he gets to see God move. So,
you know, I think as we're talking about Israel, I think that was the place that really set the course for our lives as it relates to worship and revealed to us a lot about worship. And, you know, the scripture comes to mind that says that, you know, God is looking for, he's searching the world for worshipers,
yeah.
Right? He's looking for, throughout the earth. And it doesn't say he's looking for pastors. It doesn't say he's looking for teachers or evangelists or apostles or preachers. He's looking for worshipers. Why is he looking for worshipers?
Why is he looking for worshipers? I think that's a great question. Why is he looking for worshipers? Well, he knows that we're transformed by what we behold. We don't truly know who we are. We oftentimes, you see people who worship, you know, pop stars or different things, and they start to like dress like that person. They start to look like that person. They like, you know, we emulate people that we watch. And there's something really profound that happens when we start to look at God, the one who created us, who all of a sudden we become our truest self because we're seeing who the Father created it, us to be as we look at him.
So true. And then as you realize your identity as a worshiper and you're worshiping him and you get to behold him, then you become a better pastor and a better teacher, 100%. A better evangelist and a better preacher, all these other things, right? It's the priority. And I'm a full believer in that whatever you do under the Lord is a form of worship because you're responding to God in your vocation, whatever that is. That being said, when you look at those that are closest to heaven, mm-hmm. in the book of Revelation, those that are closest to God in heaven in the book of Revelation, what are they doing?
They're worshiping.
They're singing songs and worship, right? They're not doing accounting. They're not bakers baking cookies, is what I say. They're not lawyering. They're all these other things, which are all great and can be a form of worship.
I might have bakers baking cookies.
You might have chosen that if you were not. But there's something about worship, and there's something about the power of song that is so dear to God's heart. And I think it's important that we explore that and continue to explore that because we're going to be doing it for eternity, right?
Yeah.
And so...
And the truest form of freedom, I think, is found in worship. I mean, I think people are...
Explain that.
People who are like longing for freedom, they want to be free of themselves. Like at the fall, we became self-aware.
Yeah.
We were no longer just God aware. They all of a sudden saw themselves, saw their shame, saw all the things. And I think when we truly get lost in God is when we see we're finally free of ourselves. We're not self-focused in that moment.
That's true.
And we get to be free. People try to do it through drugs, through other types of music to lose themselves for a moment and experience and feel other things. But the truest form with no hangover or no consequences, bondage is when we let go and worship the Lord.
So true. I truly feel that those people that are addicted to drugs are just pure worshipers.
They're meant to be worshipers,
right? To totally lose themselves in such a way that they are free, liberated from their own shame, sin, self-consciousness, condemnation, all that stuff, and we're liberated unto God. And so when Moses went to Pharaoh, he said, let my people go out of bondage so that they can worship, right?
Yeah.
God didn't need their worship, you know? They needed to worship so that they could see and know who they truly were by knowing their God. But let's back up just a little bit. I want to know, so I want people to know, because this is a Song Lab podcast, so Song Lab is a part of what we're doing, but it's just really the launch pad for all things creativity. But I believe it begins in worship. Mm-hmm. All creativity should begin in a place of worship. A lot of times it comes from our pain or whatever else, but our God is a creator, right? And so being connected to him and letting creativity flow from that is so important. So would you tell a little bit, give us some background. Where did Song Lab come from and why do you do it?
Where did Song Lab come from? Well, I mean, I guess in the truest form comes from the verse, like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that sounds silly, but I think when I was younger, I mean, even now, I longed for like a mentor, somebody to come alongside me to push me to become a better writer, to become a better worship leader, to help me grow in the Lord. Like those were things that I really wanted to do. And I am a person who loves to do that in community, who loves to grow. Like, I feel like I'm not a self-disciplined person that's just like, get up in the morning and I'm just going to do all these things. It's like I am motivated by doing things in groups. So at the Upper Room early days, I desired that. Like, I wanted to grow as a songwriter. I wanted to grow in worship. I wanted to grow in the Lord. So I felt like the Lord was just like, well, then what would you put yourself through over and over again to do those things and then invite everybody else to be a part of that? And so it was one of those things where, you know, it was just a ragtag group of people. We didn't have a big, huge church. We had no social media platform. We had nothing. Upper Room was just a group of people in the prayer room. You know, we didn't even have a website really, other than with the location where it was. The Lord was very specific on that, but I just started doing these little intensives so that I could grow and we could all grow together. And it was really profound what happened. I feel like we grew not only in, you know, as songwriters and all the things that I was asking, but we also grew in crazy unity. Like to see each other and the songs that we were developing each week and to hear what was going on behind it and the revelation that it was coming from all of a sudden empowered us to like want to like cheer for each other. And, you know, I'll never forget Alyssa. This was one of my, she was one of the main worship leaders of the Upper Room. She came in and she'd been having a really busy week and it was just like really crazy. And she came in and she was like, I don't know. I didn't have much time, just had a little bit, but you know, I just sat down before the Lord and wrote this, but it's probably not any good. Is what she said. And she wrote one of the main songs that, she just sang like the chorus of You Satisfy, which became an anthem at the Upper Room for years. Yeah. And I remember all of us just going, what? Oh my gosh. Like, Alyssa, finish this song. It's so powerful. And she probably would have never finished it. Maybe never even wrote it had that not been a place for us to kind of gather and push creativity out of us. So when the Lord called us out of Upper Room, which is a whole story within itself, I just felt like the Lord was like, what if you packed everything you learned over the last 7 years of leading with the Upper Room and us learning together, and what if you packed it into a weekend and opened it up for other worship leaders to come? And so we did. And surprisingly, people showed up and we had an incredible time. So we've kept doing it.
That's awesome.
That was a long answer.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer. But I think one of the things that you said that's really important, you said it fostered unity. Can you go deeper into that? Like, because one of the things I think about worship, As I've traveled around the world and I've been in some of the darkest parts of the world where there's persecution and where I've seen, you know, even with like 2020, where there was so much division, it seemed like there's two things that have been able to unify the church quicker than anything else that I've been able to witness. Number one is persecution.
Yeah.
It's like you go to the Middle East and where ISIS is, you know, just ravaging communities. And nobody cares what denomination you are at that point.
No.
We're believers. We're fighting for our life. We all love Jesus. Let's roll, right?
Yep.
The second place I've seen unity like that is in the place of worship.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, we're just beholding the same man, Jesus. We're not talking about end time theology. We're not talking about rapture. We're not talking about all these things that cause division. We're just worshiping Jesus. And I think there's something so powerful about worship that like kind of like is, it also is like the flip of Babel, right? Where Babel, they were scattered amongst, you know, the earth, and they couldn't, you know, understand each other. And there's something about worship when you're singing the same song, you know, same melodies, you're feeling the same thing, beholding the same man, that this supernatural thing takes place when he comes in. And so all that to say is unity is super important, but how did that take place, or what were the elements of that you saw in the context of a song lab or writing together?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think us worshiping together, I mean, we had so many prayer sets at the Upper Room. I mean, a lot of people know about the Upper Room now from the music, but they don't know a lot of times the roots that it came from, that we had prayer sets, 2-hour prayer sets, where a lot of times there was nobody in the room. You know, it was just the worship leader and one other person, or, you know, whatever. So we had a lot of times of worshiping together. I also know at the Upper Room early days, like our little community, they would worship at birthday parties. They would worship at, I mean, like when they got together, they wanted to worship. Yeah, there was something really powerful that was happening that I feel like in the spirit, just you're closer just because of that.
Yeah.
Like there is a unity that's formed in that, which we did worship together at those song labs. But I think, I mean, songwriting intensives, but I think just our prayer sets in general were just those, that unifying thing, but also creating together. And exposing your heart. I think a lot of times it's that we all can just write a song that's in, from our head and just say, here's a nice song. But I think when you really get down to like, we didn't want to just write a song to write a song. Like we wanted to write out of the place of, we were in the prayer room together and this spontaneous moment came out. What was happening? We were all kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
And then we're going to write out of that place. And I just feel like it with that, like there's a different unity. We're in this together. We're celebrating together. It's coming from a space together. You're sharing your heart and you're exposing your heart. And now I'm let in on your story. So now when you sing your song on a Sunday or you sing your song, you know, at a prayer set, I feel a part of it.
Yeah.
our church felt a part of it. Mm. Like when we would bring songs, they're like, this is from our church. This is from the revelation that's coming from our prayer sets that the Lord is putting in our community.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden there's a different type of unity. I'll say like the Lord was giving us this crazy revelation at the Upper Room on the power of Thanksgiving. I was searching everywhere at that time for songs that just said thank you to God.
Yeah.
Like I just wanted songs that were just going to say thank you, and I couldn't find any. And so we started writing them so that we could sing the revelation that was coming from our church. And so it was something about that unified us around what God was doing in our house.
And gratitude in our house, in your community. So it not only unified the worship leaders, but it unified the body as well around the message and the revelation that was coming forward.
Yeah. Right?
So it did bring a lot of unity through the context of song and revelation. What was that, or what were some of the revelations around Thanksgiving?
What were some of the revelations that were coming from Thanksgiving? I think one of the biggest ones is that Thanksgiving, well, I mean, first of all, it came straight from Psalm 100. We were like, okay.
There's gates with Thanksgiving, his courts with praise.
We're like, okay, that must be a key. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Like, how are you entering in? He said, enter in with Thanksgiving. So what does Thanksgiving do? Yeah. And we started to just really kind of meditate on that. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the power of Thanksgiving? If I say, come up to you and say, man, I just want to thank you so much, Michael, for, you know, getting up early and praying with me. And then also like doing all the stuff with the kids and helping with this, like automatically I'm acknowledging something that someone did for me.
Yeah.
Like, again, it's selfless in the sense that
it's
selfless.
It's
humble.
Humble. Yeah.
To be able to acknowledge something else. It makes you grateful. It puts your perspective on the positive and what you have, mm-hmm. not on the lack and what you don't have.
Yeah.
So there was something about Thanksgiving that opens your heart.
Opens your heart. Yeah.
So we realized if it's opening your heart.
Yeah. And it brings connection as well.
Yeah.
Right? It's instant connection. But if it opens your heart, what were you saying?
Well, if it opens your heart, he says it opens the gates. So what gates is he talking about? Is he talking about the gates of heaven? I believe that.
Yeah. Cause it says the kingdom of heaven is within. Right. Uh-huh. And so if it's within our hearts internally, how do we open up that gate?
Yeah.
Right. And so one of the primary ways, like the most simplest ways, is through Thanksgiving. And one of the things I love that we do sometimes, and I would encourage you if you're listening, and you're having a hard time and you're focusing on negative, you just can't see anything good. Like all hell's breaking loose in your life. And you're like, man, my life is,
this is happening and this is happening and this is happening and this is wrong.
You're just staring at the shadows. We do this exercise where I'll make people write out like 25 things or 21 things or 30 things that you're thankful for on a piece of paper. And then once you get them written down, you have to Korean style praise. And if you've never been around Koreans, Korean style praise is you just go top of your lungs, all out, full throttle, everybody at the same time. It's just, it's a melee free for all of Thanksgiving and praise.
Which, let me just tell you, the first time Michael heard that, like when we had a team, we were in YWAM
in
Jerusalem, and we had a team of Korean missionaries come in. And when they're like, okay, we're going to pray, all of a sudden they'd all at once.
All at once, everybody's super loud. I was like, I can't focus. How am I supposed to focus in this madness? You know, and I was a new believer at the time. And all of a sudden I felt like, as I was complaining to God about this, I felt like God was saying, so you're telling me if you're in a war zone and you're in a bunker and bombs are going off around you and guns are flying, you can't hear my voice? And I was like, I better learn to dial in.
Better learn to do it. But also we realize the power of it is a sacrifice. And as soon as you like, because it feels awkward to start yelling out.
Do it at the top of your lungs. But when you do, inevitably, there's breakthrough happens and you're able to get your mind off of your problem and your heart begins to open up unto the realities of God. Because your problems, in light of eternity and how big God is, no matter what the problem is, yes, they're big to you, but in God's perspective, they're not.
Yeah.
You know, so gratitude's a powerful, powerful tool. And so you started writing thank you songs.
Yeah. I wrote a lot of thank you songs.
You did. You're like the thank you song girl.
They were like, all of Upper Room makes fun of me. They're like, if it's in 6/8 time signature and it's a thank you in it, it's probably Meredith. I was like, yeah.
So you started writing thank you songs, praise songs, and you just begin to incorporate this into song labs, right? Mm-hmm. And back to unity, I think one of the cool things that we saw, even your first like song lab outside of the Upper Room, we were down in Thomasville, Georgia, and we had seven denominational churches come together.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote songs together and did a song share. And then all of a sudden it was this back doorway of unity. All these churches came together and they're singing each other's songs, worshiping together.
Yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. It was one of those things that whole town had been very divided. I mean, there were some great things that they all did together, but the churches, they were wanting them to come together.
Yeah.
And they hadn't been able to get all of the churches together, a lot of the churches together for whatever reason. And we just did a little songwriting weekend. Well, actually, I think I did a full intensive where it was like a month long of writing. And all these worship leaders from different churches and different denominations, like you said, came together. And when they came together and they wrote songs together, all of a sudden, like we did this, we did a showcase, well, we called it a showcase where we showcased those songs. And it's like all the churches showed up. And they got, and we got to celebrate each other's songs and sing with each other. And it was just ended up being this powerful, unifying.
Yeah.
And it wasn't intentionally why we were doing it. It was a fruit of us creating together.
So for those who don't know, give me a quick, like 2 minute synopsis. What is a Song Lab?
Okay. What is a Song Lab? It's usually a 2.5 day event where we worship together. I give really practical tools on how to write a song and kind of get to your heart. A lot of it's about heart. So we always want to give the why behind why we're writing. Then I give really practical tools on how, and then we write. So one of the big things that I have found with Jesus is that he would teach something and then he would immediately empower them to do it.
Yeah.
He didn't just do it himself. Like his disciples were baptizing. His disciples were casting out demons and doing miracles. He was always about making people do it. So I didn't want to just create an event where I told you how I wrote and brought in other people who said the same thing. I'm like, we're immediately going to put those things into practice. So we do that. And then one of my favorite parts is we share songs and we all celebrate. And it's a little bit like heaven, I would say. Mm. There's just... What's the Bible verse we always say? It's like the...
When you gather, each one has a song, a hymn, a teaching, a revelation, right? So Song Lab forces everyone to bring something to the table.
Everyone has brought something to the table. And so it's this beautiful expression of different people's hearts coming together and singing to Jesus. And it is just powerful. And to watch people celebrate, and a lot of times even people who have just maybe never written a full song, coming in and sharing their full song that they've written with 3 other people or whatever. I don't know. There's just something so powerful about creativity together.
Yeah.
And creating a safe place where you feel like you can do that. And that's one of the main things at Song Lab, that I want to create a culture that is free from criticism and cultivating a place of honor, honor for what each other brings, and pulling the creativity out of each other, and so that we all can just share, fail, whatever, you know, like, and have a blast doing it. And so you create so much better in play, like when you're having fun, than you do when you're like, you know, feel like you're going to be in trouble if you don't do it right.
Or that you got to make something perfect.
Or you've got to make it perfect, right?
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, podcast number one. It's our first one.
That was our first one.
We have some questions though, before we end. We have some questions that came in, and I want to ask a couple of these to you. And this is, someone asked the advice, it's advice for the worship leader.
Mm-hmm.
So they ask, to what is what extent is it okay to be worshiping on stage versus engaging the congregation? Is engagement even important? It says preachers don't preach with their eyes closed or turn their back to the congregation.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a really great question. I know like a lot of churches really value the, like, you know, stand up front and smile and do all that kind of stuff. And I get that. I'm not like, I'm not going to put anybody's thing down. For me personally, what I have found is, it's both. I feel like you have to be listening to where the Lord is wanting to go. You have to engage God because we're engaging the Lord at this point.
Yeah.
And if we're not engaging the Lord, how do we lead them to him?
Yeah, totally.
If we're not able to go there ourselves.
Yeah.
So turning our back or not doing those things, like, I, to me, it's not as big of a deal because, like, the difference between a pastor is the pastor is talking to us.
He's talking to the people.
He's talking to the people.
Worshiper, you're singing to God.
He's preaching to us. He's telling stories. He's telling all this kind of stuff. But when we're worshiping, we're supposed to be worshiping to God first.
Totally.
Now, there is a balance because you can get lost and not take people with you.
Yeah.
And there is that. And we had to learn that balance at the Upper Room. We had times where we had worship leaders go, you know, like they were off on their own thing because they'd already been worshiping before and you're not taking people with you, you know? Yeah. So they're laying on the floor and, you know, whatever else. And we're all like,
Where'd they go?
There is that balance, but there's the balance of like going, what's the Lord doing? Lord, let's lift him up. Where's the faith in the room? All that kind of stuff. And then leading people into that. But if we're not engaging ourselves, then we're not going to be able to listen to where the Lord is wanting to go because we're not engaged with what he's doing.
I agree to that. And there is that balance. But at the end of the day, it also is going to come from the leader of the church. What do they want? And if you're there as the worship leader and you're serving that vision, you're going to have to come under and serve the leader of the church. That being said, if you need to have those conversations with the pastor or the leader, talk about, hey, this doesn't need to be a performance. We're not performing for the people. This is for God. Let's figure out that balance on how we can get lost in worship, but yet bring the people along with us.
And that takes and cultivates a lot of trust between you and the, you know, if you can honor them, like the, your leader and what they're desiring, and do it in a way that you're like, here's where I would love to go, but this is what you want from me, that I'm going to honor that. Then a lot of times it breeds trust to where that if you are going to step out a little bit and go to another place, if that's not what your culture has done, then they, you can take them with you rather than dishonor and be like, well, we're just going to do it this way. Cause you know, then there's disunity and doesn't help.
Yeah,
and
does not help in worship. And I think for, from the pastor's perspective, they need to be willing to let a train wreck happen. And we
have, hard.
You know, it's so hard. You got to let it happen. Cause those are the learning moments and you learn together, but you have to create a, you know, I think a culture of debriefing and processing together what worked, what didn't, and being willing to allow that to happen. And so it takes faith and trust. So
it really does. Yeah. Which is not easy on the pastors who are willing to go, hey, we're going to just go for it and see what the Lord does tonight. You know, I remember I really honor Michael Miller. He was like, we used to, you know, when we have an hour set, we'd bring six songs in the very beginning, you know, because it was like, okay, you know, we're going to do the full songs. And then he goes, hey, I want you to do four songs and leave some room. He was the one who was encouraging some of the spontaneous and to leave room for the Lord. You know, it was a balance between the pastors and us, you know? And so that was a, it was scary. I was like, okay, well then you better be ready to pray. Cause if I don't have something, if we run through those four songs, I'm going to be on the stage wondering what we're going to do for the next 20 minutes. But it was amazing because the Lord did show up. We were able to learn how to facilitate the Holy Spirit together and what he was doing and as a leaders.
And then it swung from that to, we did a set where they didn't even sing a song.
It was like
that verse, the entire 45 minutes and nobody was coming along with them. It was a total train wreck.
Yeah. So we've made lots of mistakes and it's beautiful and messy and the Lord's not afraid of our messes.
No, he's not. But I think leaving room for God to move is super important. Okay. Last part of that question is, what about songs in a set list, that are just about Jesus and songs that are about personal experience? And they said, you know, example would be Jesus, We Love You and Defender. What do you think about those?
So Jesus, We Love You, direct to the Lord worship, Defender, a little bit more of a testimony of that he defends us. And
but
he
you're still
picks
singing
up
to
pieces.
The Lord in that song.
Totally. But he's just saying one's more testimonial. Yeah. So here's the revelation the Lord gave me. So when we were praying through blueprints at the upper room, Lord, what are you calling us to do? He gave me something really simple. And he said, what if you just throw a banquet in honor of Jesus at your song, at your prayer sets and on Sundays? And if you're at a banquet in honor of your boss or somebody, what are you going to do?
The President of the United States,
whoever it is, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to write testimonies. Mm-hmm. You're going to say the things that you love about that person, what they've done, the accolades, all that kind of stuff. So what I would do is I would lay out my songs. And if they were songs that were testimonies of like, this is what my God has done, this is what he is, I'm at that point not talking directly to him, but I'm testifying of who he is and what he's done.
You might be telling the people about how great this person is at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but those are testimonies. Those carry weight.
They do.
Those are like, the testimony is the power of, you know, it's Jesus's power. What's the scripture? I'm messing it up.
Testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy.
Thank you.
Right.
And it is. It means that he'll do it again. So he'll oftentimes again, those testimonies.
And it helps us to behold him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and remember what he's done. And then like the songs that are direct to God, to We Love You. So I love both of those. I think where I found.
Okay. I got a good point with that. Because sometimes the We Love You songs right in the beginning, you're not there yet mentally and emotionally. Because you're like, to say I love you to somebody, if I just say I love you or thank you, either one of those without giving some context, you're like, okay, what for what? But if you give
You know it's true.
You know it's true, but your heart's not fully agreeing with your mind just yet. But if you sing the testimony about how amazing God is, what he's done, how he's your vendor, then you can sing I love you so much better, right?
100%.
Yeah.
So those, I feel like both of those types of songs are valid. I would say where it's, I've found more of a block in worship is more when we're talking about what we want from God. Now, those things are good. Those, like our prayer songs or our songs where we're asking God to move or do something, I think those are awesome. But if we sing that the whole time, then we're not actually focusing on who God is and what he's done to build our faith, to see what he's actually doing. We're actually focusing on what we want from him instead. So those songs, that's where I balance that out a little bit more, is just like, you know, am I focused on myself or am I focused on the Lord?
Amen. Well, I think this is a great place to end.
Yeah.
For today, podcast number one. Thank you guys for tuning in and listening. Subscribe, listen if you want to keep listening. If you guys have any questions that you guys would like us to address, please shoot us some messages on our Instagram, SongLabMSC, or Meredith Malden, or S. Michael Malden. You can DM us or message us, and we'd love to have a conversation about what you guys want us to talk about.
So, absolutely.
All right. Y'all be blessed.